Hi, this is Seth Tierney, and you're listening to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group, featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, Inside Lacrosse analyst, and my old Hopkins buddy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, there's a great set of games on tap for this weekend. A couple of midweek games to recap, and we sit down with one of the busiest men in all of the lacrosse world, Seth Tierney, talk about Hofstra, the PLL, Team USA, and a whole lot more. So, Dixie, let's get it.
That whip just came through loud and clear. Really well done.
We have week zero in the bag.
Week one. There is no such thing as week zero.
Let's just jump right into what were your takeaways from the first weekend of lacrosse? And I want like big picture stuff. Like, what did those new rules look like in practice? And were there any surprises to you in the outcomes of any of the games?
I attended Loyola Georgetown. I thought the face-off looked pretty good. There were a couple of pre-whistle violations, but it was guys jumping, so you're still going to have that. But, Georgetown featured some new young faces on offense and fell behind the Loyola 4-1 in the first quarter and then got things together to win 13-6. I think, Syracuse, very potent up in the dome, pumping in more than, two dozen goals against Jacksonville. And Syracuse alum, national champion with the Orange, John Galloway. I was surprised with the Utah-Ohio State result. Not so much. Utah was an NCAA tournament team last year, returned a lot of pieces. But I watched Ohio State play in the fall, and I thought they were ready to turn the corner. And I think that's I thought that was an interesting result. For Big Tasty, Kayla Fayok is not the starting goalie in Columbus, which I found a little unusual based on the freshman year that he had. And other than that, I think Maryland jumped out to an 8-0 lead against Richmond, and then the Spiders got it together and eventually fell 12-7. But Maryland had some new faces, transfers accounted for most of their offense. So really no quote-unquote surprises. We're seeing the new faces of the sport making plays, dotting the box score, and that's going to be the landscape here in 2025.
Yeah, same here. No real surprises from the first week. I was unable to watch some of the games because they were all at the same time, and I had a basketball game and a coach at 12:30 come home. Saw the end, flipped on ESPN Plus, saw the end of the Syracuse game. That was like one of the few games that was still in progress. And it was like 22-3 or something when I turned it on. So that was surprising. I thought Jacksonville would keep that one closer than that. So I was a little surprised how easily Syracuse won. But other than that, I agree with you. There weren't any real big surprises other than maybe the way Utah handled Ohio State. Dix, there were some midweek games. Tuesday night, Hopkins Blue Jays in action against crosstown rival the Towson Tigers. Hopkins took a 6-3 lead into the half, got an 8-4 lead in the third quarter, and then Towson rallied back to really make it a white knuckler for Blue Jays fans before Hopkins comes away with an 11-10 win.
A lot of people, I think, were concerned. You got to give a tip of the cap to Johns Hopkins. Hard-fought win on the road in Denver this past weekend. A game they lost a year ago in startling fashion at home. But Johns Hopkins got the job done at Denver. Then you turn around, with the travel, and you have to play a tough Towson team. But I had the opposite approach. I thought that Hopkins having a game under their belt was a huge advantage for them. And I think you saw it. It was an incredibly sloppy game. A lot of turnovers by Towson. They're a very good team offensively, returning some good players from a year ago, that NCAA tournament berth that they secured by winning the CAA. But Hopkins gritted it out and got the job done. That's a game that Hopkins at when they play at Towson, they typically struggle. And they led this one really wire to wire every time Towson would make a play to get the goal, get it back to a 1-2 goal game. Hopkins would make a play on the other end to keep that cushion, and they eventually were able to pull that out. So good effort by the Blue Jays. And but still, you still have I did take a peek at Lax Power last night. Afterward, you still have people hand wringing for the Blue Jays. And hey, you're 2-0 with two, top 15 wins to start the year. That's pretty darn good.
Yeah, those are two really quality road wins
Big
within
time.
a short span. Some of the Hopkins fans I was talking to over the weekend were excited about the win in Denver, but very frightened of what could happen on Tuesday night, given that they had to come, the travel involved and the recovery time. But it looked like exactly that. Towson, it was their first game, fell behind early. Had to get their legs under them, made a comeback as Hopkins seemed to tire out and show signs of having just played a game a few days before that against a good opponent. But you're right, in the end, this will be two really quality wins for the Blue Jays. And I think that is the lesson here. It was a good night for the Big Ten on Tuesday night as Ohio State came back and got a 14-4 win over Detroit Mercy. And Rutgers coming off their win over Lehigh with a pretty easy 17-3 win over LIU. To set up some really quality games this weekend.
Yeah, I should probably mention Rutgers win over Lehigh on the road. I mean, Lehigh is your defending Patriot League champion, and they're picked in most polls second behind Army for 2025. And Rutgers, minus Shane Knoblauch and Ross Scott, two offensive players that have been there forever. They got the job done defensively, holding the Mountain Hawks to six goals. And then you want to talk about a defensive effort. Michigan gave up the first goal of the game to Marquette, and then outscored the is it the Golden Eagles? Is Marquette the Eagles these days? Yeah, outscored those guys 14-1, 14-0 the rest of the game to win 14-1. So an incredible defensive effort for the Wolverines as well. And yeah, it does set things up nicely for week two of the college lacrosse season.
There was another game where a team that ended up getting beat, the score was very lopsided at the end, but came out and scored the first goal of the game. And that was Iona Gales scoring the first goal ever for their program against Hofstra. And we'll talk to Coach Seth Tierney a little bit about that. Iona becomes it's a new program in Division I. I have a question for you. How many Division I lacrosse programs do you think there are in the state of New York, men's programs in the state of New York?
The interesting thing is I never knew where Iona was. Never knew where Iona was. And my Iona knowledge goes to Jeff Wulin, who was a really good college basketball player. Then he had a good career with the he was like the only bullet now the Washington Wizards in the NBA that would be an all-star when I was younger. But okay. So what is there now? 73, 74 men's Division I teams across the country? Is that the
That
number?
sounds about right.
I'm going to say 20.
Close. There are
Wow.
18 Division I men's programs in the state of New York. Iona becomes, which is in New Rochelle. And there's a Hopkins connection. Did you know that? Jimmy V, famous basketball coach, Jimmy Valvano was a coach at Hopkins. He ended up becoming the basketball coach at Iona, before he went to onto greater fame at NC State and won that 1983 national championship with the Wolfpack.
Yeah, it was 83. Sure.
Yeah. And
Wow.
he used to call recruits and say, "This is Jimmy Valvano, Iona College." And kids thought he owned the college. He made it sound like it was his
That's
school. Yeah.
funny.
18 schools. So welcome, Iona, to
Yeah.
the ranks of Division I. And let's get into our conversation with Seth Tierney, a guy that we've known for a long time. Crossed paths with him through many different roles and careers, but for all of us, I think, over the years. And one of the most interesting guys doing the most interesting things in the sport of lacrosse. You helped set this up, and I always appreciate these early season interviews, Dix, because we're going to get to where we interview a player every week, a college player, but it's really fun to have these conversations with integral people in the sport of lacrosse, like Coach Tierney and TD last week. And let's sit down and talk to Seth Tierney. Please welcome onto the show a man who has his fingerprints all over the game of lacrosse, from college to pro to international, Coach Seth Tierney. Thanks for joining us on the DFly and Dixie podcast.
Well, guys, it's been a while. Certainly, thanks for having me. Appreciate your time. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to entertain your guests, but we'll give it a shot.
No, I think they'll be just entertained enough, Coach Tierney. You're a man that wears many hats, and I oftentimes take comments, if not, people kind of chuckling, being like, "Okay, wait a minute. So, you officiate, you broadcast, you're a lacrosse parent, and you write and do a podcast. Like, what don't you do in the sport of lacrosse?" I think you might have me beat with respect to all the different hats that you wear in the sport. First question right off the top, how do you do it all?
The answer is it fits. It's longer days. Maybe it starts a little earlier in the morning and it goes a little later at night. But and I will tell you that everything that I do, I still don't feel like I have a job in this life. I'm still waiting to grow up, right? I mean, being the head coach at Hofstra is a dream of mine. Growing up here, what Coach Danowski built, and then and then passing it along, starting my this is my 19th season as the head coach. I was here for six as an assistant, so 25 years on this campus, and I've only been on Earth for 55 years. So I've been around this campus for a while, and just really enjoy working with the Hofstra guys and all the people that make up this community. The USA stuff, it just happened, and it happened a while ago now, probably 2014. So we're looking at a decade plus, time ago, where Coach Danowski had called and, said, if you're interested in being an assistant, then, I just happen to have the attachment for the application process. There's a lot of people that are going to apply, I would think. And ultimately, I was fortunate to be picked to be one of his assistants. And we had a great run. A lot of that would took place either in the summer or on weekends, so outside the season. So that part of it kind of fits of what's going on. And then they asked USAL asked us to come back, and we had a chance to win two gold medals, one in Israel and one in San Diego. And then recently, being named the head coach as Coach Danowski stepped down. That's another dream that I think every college coach or every coach would love to represent their country. In our case, the red, white, and blue, and to put together a staff and now do what Coach Danowski did twice or try to replicate it. It's not going to be easy as everything is always changing, but it'll be something in 2027. And as we build towards it, I can't wait to start this new journey. And the PLL is, it's just a wonderful organization to work at. It really is. And it started at actually in Israel. Our bus broke down, and Paul, well, we were waiting for a new bus, and we were at one of these little outdoor strip malls, in Israel. And Paul was having a cup of coffee at this little bake shop, and I sat down next to him, and he had mentioned that, hey, I'm thinking about starting a professional lacrosse league. You guys know me well enough. I want to keep this a PG podcast, but I had some choice words for him, like, what in the heck are you doing? What are you thinking? Right? And for the next 10 or 15 minutes, he just explained how well thought out it was and how he's going forward. And he was like, can you, would you like to be, play a role in it? And I said, I would love to play a role in it. I just don't want to be the weird uncle on a holiday, sitting in the corner of the room, and you just making a spot for me. If there's something that fits into what I can help with and it fits into my schedule, then I would love to be part of it. And I was very serious about that. Paul and I have got a really good relationship going through Hopkins, and I just didn't want one of these jobs where he's just here because he was Paul Rabil's coach. That wasn't going to happen. So my staff at Hofstra, recruiting, everything works. And to be honest with you, sometimes it helps. Coach, as a recruit, you're talking to them as certainly the Hofstra head coach, but they see you on the weekend, at the PLL, or dressed in red, white, and blue, and that certainly helps in that part of it as well. So right now, I've got a wonderful wife, and my family is understanding, and I'm going to go as hard as I can for as long as I can before this run is over.
Hard to believe you've been at Hofstra for almost 20 years now. And prior to that head coaching gig, you were the offensive coordinator at Johns Hopkins, where you coach many great players, including Paul Rabil. How has your relationship with Paul transcended? And I ask that because we look at the current landscape of college lacrosse, and it's pretty different than it was back in, the first championship that you guys won together, 2005. How have you been able to maintain that relationship, and how important is it as a head coach? Every relationship is going to be different. Some are going to be closer, some are going to be not so close. You've got tough decisions to make, your staff has tough decisions to make, but how have you been able to foster that relationship with Paul? And then maybe in a larger scale, coach, the importance of relationship with players.
Yeah, so Mark, it's everything to me. Relationships, it's everything. And again, you and Dan and a bunch of people, our paths crossed many years ago at Hopkins, and everything that I believe in is built off of a relationship. I honestly, it's not, I'm not saying it for the podcast. I believe in it. Right here on my desk, right there is a candy jar that travels with me from Hopkins to Hofstra, and I take it everywhere. And the hands of Kyle Harrison and Paul Rabil and all the greats that I've coached here at Hofstra have all been in there. And it's not a piece of candy. It's the 2 or 3 minute maybe conversation that happens out of that. Then maybe it's a sit down in a chair and we talk about it, and then all of a sudden you stumble on something that maybe they're struggling with, and that's where these relationships are formed. Certainly, if we rewind back to the days of Paul Rabil at DeMatha and Crossroads Lacrosse Club and Champ Camp, when we saw him play and bringing him in, he was a top recruit, and our job and my job down the offensive end was to have him understand, just like everyone else, that there's something bigger. And at that point in time, it was Hopkins Lacrosse is bigger than Paul Rabil or Kyle Harrison or any of those. And so that was part of it. And I got a chance to coach Paul for recruit him and coach him for 2 years, and certainly win a actually 1 year, right? We won it as a freshman, and in 05. And it was a wonderful experience. He played a major role in winning it, along with everybody else. And then my paths changed. I'm not sure he was thrilled with me, with my decision to leave to go to Hofstra, but I understood it, and it needed a little bit of time. But we always maintained some communication. And then USA came around, in the 2018 games, where I was his coach again. And so for the 2 times that Paul and I were together, we walked off the field, the last team standing, and that's a pretty cool feeling with on two different teams. And then, as we talked about earlier, then you fast forward to the PLL. Paul and Mike Rabil are the boss, right? And this is their baby, and this is their vision, and they have more vested in the PLL than anybody. And then they've surrounded themselves with great people. So when it comes to PLL items, it's not coach player relationship with Paul. It is, what can I do? How can I help? And we go forward. And I think Paul appreciates that. I've worked with family and a lot of family businesses. It's not easy. It's something that you need to learn how to work with. You need to learn how to be quiet. You need to learn how to listen. You need to know what your role is. And it's a little role reversal, right? It's Paul's the boss and I'm the employee, when it comes down to it. And then there are certainly, there haven't been a ton, but there have been a couple of conversations where maybe he's asked what my opinion was, and whether he used it or not. He valued that, and we went from there. So we always have that. But when it comes to PLL, there's people above that need to make those decisions, and Rachel DiCecco and Andrew Sinnenberg and all the people that make up that company.
If you don't mind me asking, I think I understand what a head coach does, but can you elaborate just a little bit more on your role as the chairman of the PLL advisory board and what kind of responsibilities and role you play there?
Yeah, Dan, I'm still I don't know that answer still at this point in time. It started out as the chairman of this advisory board, and there was 10 or 12 people on this advisory board, and I was there to keep them updated to if there was anything that needed to be voted on, if there was any feedback that we needed from all of these great minds in the game. Then the pandemic hit, and things kind of everything kind of shifted. I'm sure everything somewhat shifted in your lives as well. And there was college lacrosse was put on hold. Everything was kind of put on hold, and the PLL decided to take their talents to Utah and do this bubble. And that's where things started to sprout a little bit. They saw something in me, and all I can do is tell you that I'm a helper. In the PLL, right? I have got I think I have really good relationships with players, with the coaches, and then as a helper and a preventer. So I try to prevent bad things from happening. So if a coach needs to, if I need to have a sidebar conversation with them and say, hey, listen, I know that you're thinking about your team, but we have to think about the league here first. There is no your team if there's no league, or if a player steps out of line, or Matt Palem, and Mark knows how difficult of a game it is to officiate. And then you fast forward it and you add, speed and time and running against the clock in the PLL. There's a lot of heat there. There's a lot of emotion there, and trying to keep the officials, in a good spot, and that's what I do, and I do it, as often as I can, and I try to do it as best as I can, and to be able to work with the best people in the game, the best players, the best coaches, and certainly the best business people in my eyes. They started a lacrosse league from scratch, and last time I checked, they're doing pretty well.
Four officials. I want to see that come to the college game. Maybe that's the next step. We will see what the future holds. But I think this game has become such a challenge to cover the space with the speed and the size. Thank goodness for replay. One more back to the future, if you will, Seth, with your connection to Johns Hopkins. It's uncanny that classmates of yours, teammates of yours, and the coaching tree, especially for that JHU class of 91, Brian Volker. Now stepped down from Drexel, but enjoyed many, many years of success as a head coach. Scott Maher at Albany, Bill Dwan, longtime assistant at Johns Hopkins. What is it about your era? And I know they're all close friends of yours that enabled you to be head coaches.
Yeah, I mean, it is uncanny, Mark. It really is. Certainly Brian Volker and Billy Dwan, who were roommates, we were captains together. It was the three stooges. I just hope I was the smartest stooge. But those guys are unbelievable people, unbelievable competitors, and I wouldn't be here without those guys, right? I really wouldn't. Certainly coaching against them, it brought out another level of competing. I remember being on Homewood Field and playing this game, tennis ball or tee ball, and throwing the ball around. And it was like, yeah, you shouldn't check. And then before you know it, four guys were in the training room, right? And it was off practice, and it was no equipment, and guys were bleeding, and it was just a competitive nature. But Billy Dwan is, he'll always go down as one of the best people I will ever know. What he did at Hopkins is unbelievable, and he's just as wholesome of a person as you can get. Brian Volker, he's like the silent assassin, right? He's got this, he wears two hats. He's the quiet guy in the corner, doesn't really want to mix it up, and then the whistle blows, and there's just a different animal that's inside of him. And so I love that about him, and certainly both their families. And Scott Maher, I mean, you want to talk about a guy that loves the game, knows how to communicate with his players, knows how to get the best out of his group, and what he's done for Albany Lacrosse is really unbelievable. And Scotty and I have remained close. Our paths cross often, And those guys have done just a great job, certainly as husbands and fathers, and I thank them for the friendship.
And out of all those guys, you all have sons who play or played college lacrosse, but you're the only one that got to coach your son. How special was that? And what did you learn as a dad, as a coach, as a person coaching your boy?
Yeah, well, this is listen, let's just tell the story, because I don't know if a ton of people know. This whole thing started out at a Cockeysville rec field where Ryan was playing up, and again, he grew up in the Hopkins locker room, so his friends were Kyle Harrison and Paul Rabel, and that was pretty cool for him to run around the field and get a little a little extra look behind the curtain of what went on, right? And when he was playing up on that Cockeysville rec field by Target on York Road, I'll remember exactly where it was.
County home.
He came
County
over.
home.
Yeah, he came home. He came over to me, and he was crying, and he was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And he was young, and he taught me a lesson then. I wasn't coaching a Hopkins guy. I was supposed to be coaching my son, and I needed the lesson of, hey, you're the one that's wrong here, not the 5-year-old, right? And he taught me that lesson. So I took a few years off, and then he had come back and said, "Hey, would you coach us again?" And go from there. And then he had this great career, right? He's this little lefty that could sling it in a goal, and had to be called in at night, indoor lacrosse goals in the basement, dodging his sister, doing all this stuff. And then recruiting came around. He was at Massapequa High School, won a state championship, and just, he's like a guy that he brought a lot to the table. And then the recruiting was going to come around. And I said, listen, I kind of role reversed him and said, listen, you're not coming to Hofstra. So just go and look at all the other schools and we'll decide where you want to go. And so he went out, and he had an uncle that was coaching out at Denver at the time. And was that going to be an option? And he had a list of schools that was pretty impressive. It really was. And then finally one day, he came in, and I, a lot of people that know me, 10 o'clock, I'm in bed, 10:05, the curtains close, my lights go out, and my eyelids drop, and I'm done for the night. And he comes knocking, and he goes, "Hey, I just want to let you know, I've thought about it. I went through the process. I did all this crazy stuff you asked me to do, and I'm committing to Hofstra." And so now my wife is crying with tears. I'm supposed to be sleeping. This is now I'm going to be angry the next day because I'm not getting my solid eight, and we have to have a celebration. And it was all on him. I couldn't ask him to come to Hofstra, because at the first sign of adversity, it would have been put on me, or a portion of it would have, I'm here because of you, or something like that. So I had to take that step back, and it was the lesson that he taught me when he was five and I was coaching at Hopkins, that let nature will take its course. It will happen. There's a lot of right answers. And he decided to come to Hofstra. And then, I was talking about redshirting him. I didn't think he was ever going to play for me. You coach your son at any, doesn't matter what level. And at times you hope he's the worst or the best on the team, right? Because if he's the worst, then he won't get in. And maybe your wife won't be upset with you. If he's the best, then the other parents on the team will see that, and he's earned his playing time. If he's in the middle of the pack, we're in trouble. And so we had that father-son talk, and he got to work, and he got to Hofstra, and he proved it, and he earned every minute of it, and ultimately ended up the all-time scorer in Hofstra lacrosse history. And I'm just thankful I got courtside seats for it.
That's a great story. Thanks for sharing that, Seth. Let's stay here with your current Hofstra team. Start 1-0, play on a Friday afternoon, second game of the season. Tell us a little about this year's Hofstra Pride.
Yeah, I you guys do this often. I'm not sure you're going to get a coach on here and it's going to say, "I really don't like my team." I love the locker room. I really do. I can't, when you put a group of almost 50 guys together, there could be that one guy, right? Dixie, when we go back to when we were teammates, there was always that one guy that was just, you were friends with, but he was just a little off and it was a little bit wacky, right? And I know you're laughing because we're probably talking without speaking right now. But with that being said, I just don't have any. I got a great group of guys and they work really hard. They know they have to work hard. And I love what they're about. I really do. And we just finished our first game versus Iona. And to be honest with you, I'm so glad we played them. We need the game to grow. There could be some people out there that just say, you know, why are you playing them? APR and the end of the year. None of that really matters if lacrosse takes a bad turn, right? We need teams to add and schools to add and not delete or minus that from their program. So when Iona reached out, certainly said yes. My athletic director was an AD at Iona in a previous life. And then the question came up, you know, would you consider playing us in our first game ever at their place? And I said, absolutely, right? I mean, that program needed something like that. All new programs need to have their administration there and some of the hoopla that goes around with hosting the first game ever. I'm not thrilled that they scored the first goal, but they're probably thrilled. They probably took a picture of that scoreboard and it'll be all over social media. Ultimately, you know, our guys started to play pretty well. And Iona, you know, in the handshake line at the end, you know, Chad is a wonderful coach. He's doing it right. He's not totally diving into the transfer portal. He's keeping the freshmen and the redshirt freshmen and wants to grow some culture. And he, you know, he just looked at me and he's like, you know, what do you think? And I just said, Chad, the day you plant a seed is not the day you eat the fruit, right? One day you're going to eat the fruit here. Just keep doing what you're doing and block out everything else. And those guys played really hard for you. So good luck to them and their program, and they're going to get better and they're going to get better quick. Back to our guys. I've got a bunch of blue collar, you know, turnpike guys that we call them. They're as thick as thieves. They hunt together. They do everything together. And I'm looking forward to a pretty exciting season. Trying to stay healthy, you know, sometimes that's a killer for everybody in any sport, right? But trying to stay healthy and finding that balance of how long to practice, how hard to practice, how much is the mental part of it, and we've got another big one coming up against Wagner on Friday here. So we're looking forward to it. But I love my team, love the captains. And looking forward to every experience I can have with these guys.
So Seth, who is providing the leadership for this year's edition of the Pride, and who are some of the players that that folks should keep an eye out for?
Yeah, John Madsen at the attack, and is a guy that, you know, his compete level is one of what you would, you know, you look at some of the people that have crossed your world. He loves to compete. You know, if he didn't have to go in the locker room, he'd stay out there all day. Rory Jones, who is a Maryland guy down there that was at St. Paul's, and Rory has, I don't want to say that he's now a Long Island guy because all the Maryland people will be upset with me, but you know, he has just embodied what Hofstra's about, and he is as loyal as you can get. And in his fifth year, he's done an unbelievable job of just maturing as a person and as a lacrosse player. Matt Villis is a Canadian short stick defender that is just terrific. Again, one of those silent guys like a Brian Volker type short stick defender. When the whistle blows, he competes. Blake Cooling at the defense from North Carolina holds it down that end. And he certainly, those are the four captains. But there's also a couple of young guys that I think will rise. They just need a little bit of time.
Seth, one more question for you, and we'll let you go. We appreciate your time today. I want to take it back to Team USA. I don't want to give our US team the short end of the stick in this interview, but what lessons from your two gold medal runs as an assistant can you draw and take with you as you assume this new role as head coach of the team and the program? And how will you put your own imprint on the US national team?
Yeah, I mean, so certainly, Dan, it's a terrific question. And I'm going to take everything that I've learned from Coach Donowski over the years and then certainly over the USA years with us together, back on the sideline together, and a few things that he had provided. The first thing, you know, when we first met, No shame. The first time that we've met as a staff was in a bar eating chicken wings here on Long Island, right? And it was very appropriate. And one of the things that he mentioned, he gave everybody a book that was written by Coach Krzyzewski, and it was signed by Coach K. And he talked about some of his USA experiences, and kind of we started to talk a little bit about that. But he just said, you know, we're going to win and lose on who we pick, and make sure you pick the right people, right? When it's all said and done, whether you're, you know, celebrating or you're slumped over in your locker after your last game, make sure that there's no regrets and pick those guys that fit what you need, and maybe not just a name and an expectation that someone should go there. Over the course of time, my first time around, we had 10 offensive guys that I was in charge, you know, in charge of. And this last time we picked nine. And the last time it was 3-3-3, three attackmen, three midfielders, and three offensive players. Because once the whistle blows in your first game, there's no more subbing out. You can't bring anybody else off the bench. You got to play with one less. So some of the things, and again, I'm hearing it's just changed. There's going to be a shot clock in the 2027 game, World Games. So that's going to change a few things, because when there was no shot clock, you really had to bring disciplined players that were literally had to know you're leaving the PLL at a 52-second shot clock and you're going into an area where there is no shot clock. You may have to play defense for 2 minutes, which would feel like an eternity. You can have the ball, they can have the ball. So now we're going to meet, I think, somewhere in the middle or 80 seconds of a shot clock. We're still getting the finer details out. But Dan, to answer your question, A, the staff, right? I have relationships with every guy that I chose, or US Lacrosse had l allowed me to choose as a staff after speaking to a lot of people. Charlie Toomey, respect the heck out of him, handling the goalies, helping out with the D, and he's a guy that will just walk up to the first meeting and say, "What do you need? Like, I'll sweep, I'll do whatever you need. Just happy to be part of it." Kevin Warren, who played for me when I was an assistant at Hofstra, and has carved out himself one heck of a career so far, and then he's going to handle the defensive end of the field. And I have a relationship with Kevin, and we can talk without speaking. And then Bob Benson, who, you know, when I got to Hopkins, he was there and he was in my office, and you guys know where it is. It was actually the coat closet for the basketball game was my office, right? And that's where this whole thing started back then. And Bobby would come in and he would just talk about offenses. And when I first met him, I'm like, who is this guy? And why is he driving me crazy? And it's one of those things where I think he's taught me more than maybe I've taught him. And he was just one of these unique players that has a unique look at the game. So it starts with our staff, those four guys, or including myself, getting together, rowing in the same direction, and then getting on the same page. Our first event will be this December, down at the coaches convention down in Florida, where we'll have a chance to bring 44, 46 guys down there and you know, kind of scrimmage and set the foundation. And then we're going to look at a lot of different players to fit in here on what's going on. You have to keep an eye on everybody's birth certificate, like who's getting older. We have a responsibility. And USA Lacrosse and Mark Riccio, it's clear they want to be number one in international lacrosse with every team. So that's not a hidden expectation. It's right out in front and right at the top of the pile. And so I need to keep an eye on that PLL side of things, and the guys that are in college that might be coming out in the next year or two that could be part of this team. Two times in the 18 games, a guy by the name of Trevor Baptiste was still at Denver. And he made an impact and did a great job on that team as a college player. And then there was you know, a small midfielder named Brennan O'Neill in 2023 that made the team, and he had a little bit of his international coming out party in that championship game when he was, you know, it wasn't by accident that his line mates were Michael Sowers and Tom Schreiber, and when they put a short stick on him, you know, he went to work, and he did a great job. So we have to look at all of those things. But again, it's going to be about people. It's not going to be about names. It's not going to be about accolades. Who could go to sleep and wake up and make sure that next day is game day? Who can bounce back? Who can mentally play, 8 games in 10 days or 7 games in 10 days? Who fits the mold? And then there's those tweeners, right? Who's the defenseman that could play a little bit of long stick midfield? Who's the long stick middie that could play a little short stick D middie? Who's the short stick D middie that can give us a run on offense? Who's the offensive middie that can give us a run on defense? Who's the offensive middie that can play attack? And who's the attackman that could play a little bit of midfield and also pick, the best faceoff guys that we can pick and make sure we get a couple of goalies that don't blink and we'll get to work and see what happens in 2027 in Tokyo.
Seth, we appreciate your time so much. Thanks for joining us on the show today, and best of luck this season and moving forward.
Yeah, guys, to be on this call and to be on this podcast with you guys where, our paths crossed in a prior life. It's great to see both of you. I appreciate it. When Rachel reached out and said, am I allowed to give my cell phone to Mark Dixon? I thought about it twice. I said, you can give it to Dan Flynn. I don't know if I would give it to Mark Dixon, but I appreciate your time and here always, and obviously appreciate the support and the coverage.
Thanks, Seth. Welcome back to the DFly and Dixie podcast, presented by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com.
It's been a long time since I had the opportunity to catch up with Seth and brought back good memories. Seth was a senior when I was a freshman at Hopkins. He was one of our captains. And he's a guy that you could just go to, and he had anything and everything. If he needed a head or, a shaft, or if he needed a ride, or if he needed a good way to kind of circumvent the dining program, Seth was, he's always been a resourceful guy. Never forget, he had a Jeep, black Jeep Cherokee with the license plate Hot Wax 13. The New York plates, legendary at Homewood Field. But you want to talk about a guy who just loves the game, has so many different roles, and it's astounding. So that was a conversation long overdue. Glad we were able to have Seth back on the show. Man, he's been at Hofstra almost 20 years. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Coaching college across for a long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned how resourceful he is, and then he talked about his role at the PLL. He's sort of like the Ray Donovan of the PLL now. If there's an issue, he'll smooth it over. He'll fix it.
You think he goes cracking heads when he has to? You think he's the guy?
He knows guys. He knows guys. No, I think he is a diplomat.
Yeah, I understand what
he
you're
does
saying.
It diplomatically. He's more like
my
a
first
Ben,
question
Ben
is, who's
Franklin.
Bunchy then? Who's Bunchy?
I don't know. It's a good question, but it was really fun talking to him. And, I'm going to apologize to him right now. Usually we have these conversations and then for the official interview, and then there might be another, sometimes as long as an hour, sometimes we'll stay and talk to whoever the coach is or the guest. But I mistakenly stopped recording by ending the meeting.
And I can't believe you did that.
I know. Sorry, Seth. I didn't mean to do that. I really did. I'm very embarrassed about that because that's the first time that's ever happened. So my apologies. But great interview. I really enjoyed talking to him. And again, like you said, he wears many hats. And best of luck to him and Hofstra this season as they get going. All right, Dix, let's look forward to this weekend. And there are several more teams that we'll get to see for the first time in action in 2025. There's a few top 20 matchups to get excited about. Unfortunately, almost all the games are, again, between a small window of time. So because of that, we're going to include some extra games that are on Sunday and Monday, because there's a pretty big game on Monday, into our weekly list. But it gets started on Friday. Vermont, the Catamounts, are going to go into the Dome to play number 2 Syracuse, who won their first game handily against Jacksonville. And I want to see what Vermont can do, but I also want to see Syracuse get a better look at Syracuse when, it's the only game on.
So Vermont goes into the Dome, America East, They lost in the America East Championship last year to Albany by a goal. So the Catamounts are hungry to get back to the perch in the America East, and what a test to take on Syracuse. We saw a lot of offensive weapons from the Orange in the dome in that resounding win over Jacksonville. Defensively, Syracuse is stout as well. Billy Dwan headlines that group. So we'll see what this brings on Friday night. But it's cool, you know, Friday Night Lights, if you will. Exclusive game should get a good number of eyeballs, and we'll see if Syracuse can continue their dominance that they displayed last weekend against Jacksonville.
Moving on to Saturday's games. This is always a slugfest. At UMass, the Minutemen will take on number 13 ranked Army West Point at noon.
And this was a game that I saw a little bit of last year as they played down in Georgia, in Atlanta. It was a double header. It was UMass Army and then North Carolina Mercer. And Army had to come from behind to beat the Minutemen last year. So the favorites in the Patriot League, the Army Black Knights, we know that they return a ton of talent. Evan Plunkett could be arguably the best midfielder in the country. Now with the graduations of Shane Knoblauch, and then you had Graham Bundy Jr. at Georgetown. And then you have a UMass team that is always well coached, always gritty, always tough. And you're right, these are two physical, hard-nosed lacrosse teams, and it should be another close contest.
Another noon start. Michigan is ranked number 15 this week. They're 1-0. We'll take on the number 16 ranked North Carolina Tar Heels. And let's talk about the Tar Heels team a little bit. People are excited about the Tar Heel lacrosse team this year, especially since they don't want to talk about their basketball team.
You just had to go there with your Duke Blue Devils winning against the Tar Heels last weekend. You had to get that swipe in there, didn't you?
Anyway, Michigan going down to Tobacco Road to take on the Tar Heels in a top 20 matchup that is going to be a really good game to watch.
It should be. You've got the two-time defending Big Ten tournament champion Wolverines, 1-0. Heading into Chapel Hill, first of two trips that they'll make to Tobacco Road, because they'll play Duke on February the 22nd. And you want to talk about a team that really has beefed up their schedule. You look at the non-conference slate for Michigan, Marquette, Carolina, Duke. They've got Harvard, Notre Dame. So, you know, like most schools that are up and coming, you know, they've beefed up their schedule. And I think it's benefited them well. North Carolina, a team, a lot of expectations this year, a lot of pressure, but they've looked good in scrimmage wins over Ohio State and Delaware this past weekend. I haven't been able to get to see the Tar Heels in person, but all indication is Mike G is as good as advertised between the pipes, and the offense looks pretty solid. So this will be a terrific game down in Chapel Hill this coming weekend.
All right, moving on. There's a top 10 matchup. Number 10, Georgetown, coming to Homewood Field to take on the 8th-ranked Blue Jays, who are now 2-0 after their win on Tuesday night. 1 p.m. game. This is a big one.
It is, and it'll be physical. This is a game, big early season matchup, and you can watch this game on ESPN Plus, I believe, as well as, you know, I think the Michigan North Carolina game will be on ACC Network Plus. So these games will be streamed. Georgetown 1-0, saw some great goaltending from Anderson Moore this past weekend. He looks like he's ready to take the next step. The Hoyas were without their top faceoff man and a starting defenseman against Loyola, and still were able to dominate the faceoff dot and hold the Greyhounds to six goals. Now you're taking on a Hopkins team that's got two games under their belt. This will be their third game in what is that, 7 8 days? That's never easy. So, but Hopkins looked good. Scott Smith played solid. It looked like he was benched a little bit in the season opener against Denver, or missed a little bit of time before he was inserted in that game. But the Blue Jays are deep. Shout out Eric Chick Jr., my buddy Eric Chick, a teammate of mine at Hopkins. His son is playing a role on attack and midfield, and doing some nice things for the Blue Jays. So this will be a good game at Homewood. The weather this weekend doesn't look great.
Does not.
Looks really kind of sketchy,
And
especially on Saturday. So hopefully that doesn't affect things too much in terms of footing and physical things out there at Homewood and around the, around the Upper East Coast, let's say.
it keeps changing. Like the weather pattern is shifting a little bit, but we're in for like some bad weather the next couple of weeks here in the Maryland area. And it'll affect this, all the Baltimore teams will be affected at the same time because, of course, Hopkins has a big game at home at 1 o'clock, but so does Loyola. And they'll take on the number four ranked Maryland Terrapins also at 1 o'clock. Again, why can't we stagger these games and play one at noon and one at three so fans can see both of them?
Yeah, you're asking the wrong guy. But Loyola coming off that 13-6 loss to Georgetown, Max Watkinson played a nice game in between the pipes for Loyola. They'll look to rebound against a Maryland team that had some new faces scoring goals against Richmond, 12-7 victors over the Spiders. This is a game 2 years ago that Loyola won at Ridley. Hopefully, I mean, Loyola has one of the best home field advantages in the country with the student body when they come out. So hopefully the weather won't affect that too much and it'll be a decent crowd at Ridley on Saturday.
Mentioned a couple of games on Sunday and Monday that I want to get your opinion on. And the first one's on Sunday, number 12, Penn State. Got a victory over Colgate in their season opener. We'll travel to Villanova, take on the Wildcats in their first real game of the season. And it's on noon on Sunday.
That's always a great in-state rivalry between the Nittany Lions and the Wildcats. Penn State, hard-fought win over Colgate, a game they dropped a year ago. That was a weird opening day in 2024. You had Penn State shocking upset loss to Colgate on really just an errant pass that was an ill-advised pass. And then you had Hopkins losing at home to Denver on a, just bad defensive communication, really. But both, again, the Blue Jays and the Nittany Lions able to exact revenge this year in 2025. So, Villanova, what do they have? They're always one of the greatest, I don't want to say greatest mysteries, but you don't see them on TV. You don't really hear about them a ton. They're always just kind of lurking. They're always good for an upset or two. Will this be one of those? Because you have to figure Penn State is the favorite in this game. Always fun, always entertaining, and I don't know. I don't think it's fair to say that bragging rights for Pennsylvania are up with St. Joe's and UPenn out there, as well as some other Drexels in that Philadelphia area. But th this will be a great battle between two of the Keystone competitors.
And finally on Monday, Towson, ranked number 17 in the latest poll, looks to rebound and they'll travel to Syracuse for a Monday night thriller in the dome. That's at 5 o'clock
I
on
like
Monday.
it. I like it. Monday 5. Wow, that's terrific. A replay of a first round game last year in the NCAA tournament where Towson defensively decided not to go behind the cage and play Joey Spolina, which is not wise because when you give him that kind of leeway, he does have the opportunity to pick you apart. I think the way that you disrupt Spolina's game is you apply pressure, stay in his gloves. We'll see how Towson is able to rebound from this from that loss on Tuesday to Johns Hopkins, and that should be a great game in the dome. That should be terrific because Towson is a team that has clearly established themselves as the favorite in the CAA, and challenging themselves with these out of conference games is only going to make them stronger and prepare them for that conference. Trying to defend that conference title.
Lots of great games this weekend. So pick your games you're going to see, make your schedule, make sure that you're in front of a laptop, a TV, a streaming device, so you can
Yeah.
see all these games. Hey, Dix, it's time for our give and go. And this is the, we're both big football fans. And this weekend marks the end of the 2024 football season in the NFL. College is already done. Who do you like in this year's Super Bowl? That's exactly the way I feel. I'm not that excited at all.
I mean, yeah, that kind of sums it up.
Who's the favorite? The Chiefs the favorite?
I haven't even seen the line. I think the Chiefs might be favored by a point and a half.
We're Ravens fans. But I did grow up in Delaware, Wilmington area, which is a big suburb basically of Philadelphia. I grew up an Eagles fan. Lived in Baltimore area for 30 something years since then. So my allegiance is with the Ravens primarily. But even as an Eagles fan, I'm just like, I'm going to root for them, obviously. And I don't
I
think
think I'm
anyone
leaning in that direction.
is
I'm
rooting
definitely
for the
leaning in that
Chiefs.
direction as well. Yeah.
But it's just the Super Bowl squares. Had a neighbor kid knock on my door on Sunday. He's trying to raise some money for his baseball team. He knows I'm a good, easy mark to want to buy some Super Bowl squares. And I had to tell him no, because there's several other teams that are fundraising. Hannah's teams, Bennett's teams, they're doing their own fundraising. So I gotta support them first. But even that, I was like, I will do this out of obligation, but I'm not excited for it. Usually I send that link to some of my other friends who like to have a little action on the game. I didn't even bother doing that this year. And one of them won it last year. One of them won like the jackpot last year. And it's not interesting. It's just not a.
Yeah, it's definitely not a lot of energy outside of Philadelphia and Kansas City fandoms. It's fatigue with the chefs. The perception that the refs help them. I tell you, media day, I saw a couple clips. It was funny. You got some wise guys out there. The one guy asked Travis Kelce, he said, "Who do you love? What do you love more, Taylor Swift or the Phantom roughing the passer call when it's third down for you guys in the
Wow.
playoffs?"
Oh, man.
And
That's pretty
Travis Kelce just said, "Great question. Anybody else?" And then another person asked Mahomes who his favorite ref of all time is. And Mahomes was like, "Hey, all the refs do it. All the refs do it." But I can't even do that Kermit the Frog voice. All the refs do a great job. We respect them. We appreciate it. Blah, blah, blah. And he goes, "Yeah, but which one do you send a Christmas card to?" The guy was relentless. So people have reached their saturation point with the chefs. And
Yeah.
then with the Eagles, I can't stand their head coach. That guy just looks like a
Oh yeah, he
punk
does
and he
seem to
acts like
rub
a
people the
punk.
wrong way.
You got big, what's it, Big Dom, the doofus security guy that likes to get his nose in there. But listen, man, I like Jalen Hurts. I like their receivers. I love Saquon.
What's not to
And I've
like
got a
about
lot of friends that
Saquon?
are Eagles fans,
Yeah.
So that's a good and bad thing. One, it's you like to see them happy, but two, you don't want them sharing their happiness with you. And I guess probably every fan base, if you followed them around post game, Ravens included, you could probably see some bad actors, harassing other fans. I mean, the Ravens became a little infamous with
Yeah.
that jackalope
After the
outside of Cross
Commanders,
Street Market taking out
after
some Commanders fans,
that,
and
that was a
that was
crime.
bad.
That was a
But that
crime.
was, but I like to think that's an exception, right? The Eagles fans, they're just brutal, man. I mean, there were clips of Commanders fans leaving that NFC Championship game with a smile on their face, like, yeah, congratulations, you guys won. And Eagles fans are like kicking people and taking their hats.
I
And
saw that.
it's like, come
It's
on, guys, it's a
embarrassing. It's,
daggone game.
yeah. And I think there's just the culture of the fans. It's like, this is the way we're supposed to be. But no,
No, you're
I
not
mean,
playing.
I know.
You're not playing.
But even, I mean, if you watch players, as soon as the game's over, they're dapping each other up, hugging, laughing, like from the
Exchanging
opposing teams.
jerseys.
Sometimes they'll have a prayer circle together.
Yeah, exactly.
The game ends, it ends, right?
That's
And
it.
still, you shouldn't be ever arguing with fans of the other team.
No.
It's just dumb. It's they
No.
paid money to get into the
Silly.
game just like you did. Are you gonna do anything special for the game? You having going to a Super Bowl party
No.
or yeah,
No.
I'm not
No.
interested in doing that either.
No. Just watch the game. I have to travel early the next morning. So it'll be a day of laundry, packing, other things.
Gym tan laundry.
GTL, you know it. That's right.
Shout out, Paulie D.
I've been told I resemble the situation a little bit more.
Mark, the situation, Dixon.
God.
Oh, that seems like a good place to end.
Well, what was a give and go?
That was it. The Super
Oh, that was
Bowl.
it? Oh,
Yeah, that was
okay.
the Super
All
Bowl.
right.
We're just
Wow,
dishing
look
about
at
the Super
us.
Bowl.
I didn't even know I was being given goat.
A reminder that the DeFly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. We're going to be here all season. If you like what you heard, like us on your favorite podcast app. Hit the subscribe button. Leave a review. But more than anything, tell a friend, share the love. It's free. And it helps us out. We always love to hear from you. Feel free to email us at dflyanddixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the games.
Bow.